Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. Mukhlisa and Aizada, two beautiful souls from Uzbekistan in Kyrgyzstan, are no more with us because they are the latest victims of violence against women in Central Asia. These might be the latest, but far from being isolated cases in the region. While similar tragedies keep repeating, local authorities yet to come up with a serious plan to stop this horrific trend from repeating and growing. So what happened to Aizada in Mukhlisa? What their stories tell us about the bigger picture in Central Asia and what can be done about it? To discuss all these, I'm joined by two women rights activists from Central Asia, Samrin Mamedova, an activist with Nemolchi.uz, an anti-violence project. Samrin is joining us from Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Kamila Ishaliva, an independent journalist from Kyrgyzstan who focuses on women rights. Kamila is in Bishkek, Kyrgyzstan. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague, Czech Republic. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. So a couple of months ago, we had a similar conversation following another horrific incident in Kyrgyzstan involving a young woman, Brulai, who got killed in police protection by her kidnapper. And now Aizada gets killed almost in a similar fashion. I guess in Aizada's case, her alleged kidnapper also found dead, Kamila, right?
Yes.
So first, let's start the conversation with the full picture of Aizada's story. Kamila, what happened to her and what's going on with her case as we speak?
So on April 5th this year, three men abducted 27-year-old Aizada Kanatbekova in the center of Kyrgyzstan's capital, Bishkek. And one of them had been stalking her for months. So 2 days later, on April 7, the car was found by a farmer in one of the fields in Echu region, and inside was the body of strangled Aizada and also the body of her suspected murderer. So he had died from knife wounds and he had likely committed suicide. And the interesting fact is that one of the witnesses alerted police immediately after the abduction, but they arrived at the site only an hour later. And moreover, police had street cameras footage. They knew the car license plate, the name of the suspect, and his phone number. But actually, they had failed to find Aizada, even though they claimed that the search for her was nonstop.
Yeah.
And also, Aizada planned to travel to Turkey for work this week. But she didn't. She died,
So the suspect knew that she was planning to travel to Turkey, I guess.
Yes, probably he knew about that. He decided to kill her.
Yeah, before she would leave. So recently, another woman came out, Kamila, saying that she and her friend was also a victim of this man. Again, we are talking about this suspected kidnapper of Aizada. What's his name? Zamir Bek. Tenizbayev, yeah. But the tragedy is that the woman who spoke to our Kyrgyz service, Radio Azatik, she spoke in condition of anonymity, of course, that she said that she reported to police when the incident took place back in 2019 and nothing happened to him. Contrary, she was mocked by police. Perhaps it brings us to a bigger topic, which I would like to focus on a little bit later, which is about the treatment such cases get from the local authorities. It is very, very disturbing, and I know you have reported about this, Kamila. On Aizada, though, how has been the reaction by people, Kamila? I see protests were taking place lately, and they have been asking for some officials to be removed from their positions. Anything happened? Anything came out of that?
The reaction of the public was immediate, and her murder sparked protests in Bishkek and Osh. But actually, nothing has happened, and people demanded the interior minister to resign, but actually he didn't.
Did Jabarov say anything about this?
Yes, he said that this is a tragedy and something like that, but he, I think, is just the official letter for him, so he had to do this.
Yeah, we will get back to this. So let's go to Uzbekistan. Samrin, though the context is a little bit different, a couple of days ago, a horrific case was also reported involving a death of young women in Uzbekistan, where the victim apparently has killed herself. I'm talking about Mukhlisa Kadambayeva. So tell us about her. What do we know in terms of the circumstances of her death?
Yes, a few days ago we knew about this tragedy. Young woman found hanged in Khorezm region. It's one of the region of Uzbekistan. Her name was Mukhlisa Kadambayeva. And on social networks, it is reported that the woman was beaten by her husband and his family. And the reason was that she took money to went to her aunt's birthday without asking her husband, because in Uzbekistan, in our society, mostly women should ask permission from husband or from his parents to go somewhere. So that was the reason. I mean that social media reported such like that. And even Saida Mirziyoyeva, she is a daughter of President of Uzbekistan. She wrote on her Telegram channel about violence. She said that such cases became more in Uzbekistan. It is a big tragedy.
That was kind of interesting, the way Saida Mirziyoyeva was reacting to her case. Just to use her word exactly the way she's described that, she was using all the right words to describe the situation, I guess, like Mukhlisa being the face of many unknown women who go through her fate, and such cases keeps repeating because perpetrators are not punished and we keep silent. You know, it's interesting that she said that. Of course, if anyone can do anything about it, that is Saida. But apart from the irony, has there been any reaction, Samrin, to Mukhlisa's case in Uzbekistan by the local authorities, by the people, by the members of civil society?
You know, we of course, many of them commented and many people on social media commented this. But we have such problems in our society, and it is one of the biggest problems of our region. I mean, not only in Uzbekistan, but in whole Central Asia. And such cases increased. You know, it's our big problem. For example, I think last month was not the same, but similar situation. One woman tried to kill herself and her three daughters because family of her husband and himself, her husband, they always told her, you cannot give the birth to son, just only daughters, daughters. They have three daughters, and she killed herself. But girls are safe, her daughters.
Wow.
Yeah, we have such cases in our region, in our republic, and I think that like government should renew maybe some laws or maybe take under their control such cases.
Samrin, hold your thoughts about what government can do about this. I mean, we are going to come back to that aspect of our discussion a little bit later. So before that, Bruce, as I said earlier, though we are talking about these two cases and about these two countries, but women's rights remain critical in Central Asia throughout the region. As a Westerner, Bruce, studying Central Asia, what stands out to you in these two cases and how the rest of the region is compared with these two countries when it comes to gender-based violence?
I suppose the thing stands out the most is the fact that, you know, you mentioned at the start of the show, this is gender violence has been a topic on the Majlis several times already. It's also, you know, specifically in Central Asia, and it's been the topic of international articles and reports and even some locals, not really so much in Uzbekistan. But I mean, so it's been out there for a long time. And you don't see, even though the authorities, every time something like this happens, they say, we're going to get tougher on this. Kyrgyzstan, especially, we're certainly with Alakachu, every time something like this happens, we're going to toughen the laws, we're going to do this. And in the end, you get you know, it happens, and you kind of get the same response from the authorities, which is nothing, basically. I mean, it's not, you know, in Kyrgyzstan's case, they had to address what happened to Aizadeh. But in Uzbekistan's case, besides Saida Mirziyoyeva's telegram comment, it really didn't get much attention. Mm-hmm. It's getting more attention in certain, like I said, in international media. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, officials just don't, you know, I keep going, are you unable, or is it more that you're unwilling to do something about this? You talk about changing laws, you talk about taking women more seriously when they come with these complaints, and then, you know, when it happens and people start looking into the background of why this happened, you find out that really authorities were just completely apathetic to what was happening, you know, and even after the deaths, you know, the horrible deaths of these young women, you know, it's hard for them to put the blame where it belongs, you know, on the aggressors, you know, husband, would-be kidnapper, whoever. Mm. You know, they kind of say, well, you know, yeah, that was kind of bad, but what are you going to do, basically?
Mm. You know, that's very interesting what Bruce, you said, whether they are unable to do anything about this or are not willing. I mean, in Saida's case, I think later might be true, she's not willing to do anything about this because, I mean, talking of ability, I mean, she has all the power to do anything about this, right?
Well, you know, not only her, but Tanzila Narbayeva, who's the chairwoman of the Senate, has commented on this too. Now, that's a powerful person. You would think the chairman of the Senate really wanted to get something done, that would be very easy to get something. You know, once again, it's kind of lip service. Oh, this is in previous events. She said this is horrible. You know, they formed a gender committee, a women's committee, you know, to try to look into this and solve these problems. And that was pretty much the last I ever heard of that committee, really. I mean, every now and then there's mention that it met, but I haven't seen that they did anything, you know, or come to the defense of someone who finds himself in this situation.
Now
Mukhlisa is dead, right? But you would think that the women's committee would be all over this right now. And publishing, this is unacceptable behavior. Yeah. You have to respect everyone in your family, you know, and how dare you treat your wife, and not Mukhlisa was pregnant, by the way, and the mother of your kids, you know, in a lot of cases, too. How dare you do that? You know, they don't.
It's very, very...
You know, sorry for interrupting you. Yes, we have all these gender committees. And you noticed Tanzila Narbayeva. And they can do, but you know, the problem is in our traditions, in our culture, because in Uzbekistan, not only Uzbekistan, I mean whole Central Asia, I mean, when young people married, the attitude to women is like she is slave. Not she's like a person, she is human, she is a slave in the family of her husband. And the problem is in this. If we want to change something, we should change our traditions, our culture. We should teach to respect women, to respect girls, ladies, like this. The problem is this.
That perfectly makes sense, Samreen. But again, authorities comes in here. I mean, that's their job to educate the society, and that's their job to prevent these things from happening. They have all the tools, like they can create laws, they can punish security officers who don't tackle these kind of issues when it happens. So I mean, they have the tools to make changes here. But we are going to talk about this, I mean, why they are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and what perhaps might be going on there. You and Bruce, both of you have raised very relevant questions. But in the meantime, you know, we have been talking about these two cases, which are distinctive, but very, very, very painful. I just wondered, what are the other forms of violence that women face in their day-to-day lives? Earlier, I was going through, Camilla, your story that you published recently, where you speak about another incident with a woman named Amina. She was kidnapped and abused and then thrown out of the car. You know, I guess my question is, what the tragic death of these two ladies tell us about the bigger picture on gender violence in the region?
So such incidents are not unusual in Kyrgyzstan. And the problem is that many people believe that kidnapping is an ancient tradition. But it became popular only a few decades ago. And several centuries ago, when the Kyrgyz were nomads, the bride kidnapping happened only when there was love between a man and a woman, but the parents did not allow them to be together. And then the man abducted his woman from her parental home. But now many people believe that this is a tradition and this is a custom of Kyrgyzstan, but it's not. I think the problem lies also in the sexual violence, because in the majority of the cases, women experienced sexual violence from the kidnapper in the first night after abduction. And it happens because if a woman will spend a night with this man, she will no longer be able to give up marriage. It will be a shame for her, and that is the kidnappers use the weakness of the victim and force to marry him using such horrible methods. I think that there is no insurance against violence towards women in Kyrgyzstan. It may happen to any woman, no matter of her residence or education and social status. And this situation remains unchanging without real support from the Kyrgyz government and society. And thousands of women like Amina, the story that I told in my article, will go on suffering on their own because there is no support from people, government.
Right. Yes. Yeah, the following Amina's story, you also go to describing this situation when, you know, victims try to report their cases and the type of situation they go through in that process. We are going to talk about that later, too. So why these tragedies keep repeating and what can be done about them? So let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the Majlis podcast that today I'm joined by Samrin Mamedova, an activist with Nemolchi.uz, an anti-violence project in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, Kamila Ishaliva, an independent journalist from Kyrgyzstan who focuses on women rights in Bishkek in Kyrgyzstan, Bruce Panier, the senior journalist and the editor of Radio Free Pretty Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. Bruce is joining us from Czech Republic, from Prague. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Pretty Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the recent cases of violence against women in Central Asia. So, though we are focused today, rightly, about Central Asia on this platform, but the suffering of women is not unique to this region. In preparation for today's show, I came across with a chilling data in which, according to a recent report by the United Nations, about 20 countries around the world have laws that, to some extent, allow men convicted of rape to escape criminal prosecution if they marry the women they raped. Again, I guess this speaks to what you were just talking about, Kamila. So the world is kind of going crazy, with few exceptions. But tragedy with Central Asia is kind of in a different level. We see a sharp step back from the past to a darkness. It's bold word that I'm using. Soviet Union had so many faults. Central Asia has lost so much under the occupation. But if there was one thing good, and this is my interpretation, if there was one thing good, that was the emphasis on gender equality. But those achievements are slowly let die under the watch of Soviet-trained leaders. It's such a painful reflection. I don't know if you agree with my analysis. Feel free to counter if you don't. But what I'm saying is, yes, we understand authorities in Central Asia are sensitive about any reform that can shake up their grip on power. But this is not politics. So what happened to their Soviet training, Bruce?
It is strange, I agree, and kind of appalling that the leadership is going along with this. You know, that all the governments tried to reinvent an image of who they are. That had nothing to do with being part of the Soviet Union and nothing to do with being under Russian rule. I mean, a lot of that involved going back to religion. And I've made this point in other shows before, but Islam is like this, is a force that they fear probably more than any other, but it's there and they can't do anything about, it's that old thing about you got a tiger by the tail and you can't let it go or it'll attack you or something, So there seems to be some deal anyway where since the country is traditionally Islamic, and since Islam is their religion, and that distinguishes them from being Soviet or under Russian rule, that they've let this in and they've said, We are Muslims traditionally, and we have our own culture and we have our own traditions. But some of the, like I said, as they've reinvented their image, some of the traditions have kind of been reinvented too. I'm not sure that what the way that Islam is practiced in some aspects today is reflects that much about what it was like earlier. But certainly they've given some leeway to the clerics to speak out about these things, and they're very conservative in their views. So this has kind of reground this idea of inequality between the genders when they meet. So, you know, that's one, I know it would be an unpopular comment with a lot of people, but I mean, you really have to lay this at the door of the mullahs and the muftis and people like that who say that this is acceptable and you have to go along with this, you know, or it's part of us. It's part of us, but it's a bad part of the past that we don't want.
If that's what some mullahs are going to say in Central Asia to legitimize these horrific incidents that women are going through, I guess that would not be a true reflection of what Islam really is about. And I'm not any religious scholar, but that's what my understanding of Islam is. And
I agree.
Yeah,
but I'm not an Islamic scholar either, obviously. But I agree that this isn't part of it, and the authorities could step in on this.
Time. So when you were
and constitutionally everyone has equal rights, so we can't, you know, don't tell people this. You know, I mean, a lot of times, and our guests will know better than me, a lot of times if you're thinking about getting divorced or something like this, that's not only is there pressure from the secular authorities, but the religious authorities especially will be the ones that say don't do it. And we'll tell women that you know, if you have to sit there and get beaten and abused by your husband and your husband's family, then that's the way it is. You gotta stay together for the family.
So this earlier,
you know, and this is the wrong message.
Earlier you were saying, Bruce, not saying but questioning, when we start talking about Saidi's coming, so why authorities are not doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, so that's your interpretation? I mean, although they acknowledge in many cases that some wrong things are happening here, if they are not willing to do anything about this, this is fear of, you think, mullahs?
You have to, like I said, they have to figure out a way to live with Islam too, you know, especially the leadership. But let's face it, for the most part, you know, you mentioned there were some former communists. They were about as unreligious as you could be. But there's got to be some concessions and some deals made with these people to keep them in line, because, you know, okay, you can say that if a mullah, it's strange to think, but if a mullah was up there preaching or something like that and said, you know, and you'll see this every now and then, that if you have to beat your wife, there's only certain ways you have to do it and stuff like that. You can't be too, you know, lose total control or something like that. But if they said the government is bad, then they would shut them down immediately. Right? If they said our president is lying to us and it's your job as a Muslim to overthrow this corrupt and unjust government right now, they would be in prison so fast, you know. But so, like I said, there seems, since the leadership doesn't understand much about the religion, but they know that the religion's there and they have to coexist with it. You know, there seems to be some conversations that we don't get, or at least some tacit understanding they have between each other about what's fair to say and what's not.
And also, the politics aside, the reaction or lack of reaction by the authorities on the top leadership positions are aside, it looks like that the problem kind of exists in all levels of the government. Again, coming back to Camila, your story, you know, first of all, I wonder what's your thoughts about what we ended up talking with Bruce about why authorities are doing what they are doing and why they are doing it. So also in your story, Camila, on the open democracy, it looks like the whole system is blind about this matter. Like when you describe Amina's case, in challenges such victims face when they try to report this incident to police and judiciary. Tell us about those challenges that you describe in your story.
So even after being raped, women continue to face tons of problems. Instead of support and understanding, they face public judgment, pressure from investigators, and also judicial bias. And as a result, the victim feels that it's her fault. It's her fault that she was raped and assaulted. And so she's forced to be ashamed of everything that she had to experience. And the government is doing too little to provide adequate protection and access to justice. This is why many victims of gender-based violence do not file complaints. And even if they do this, these complaints do not result in prosecutions or convictions. And in my opinion, the main problem is that almost 94% of police officers are men. They have the same victim-blaming stereotypes. They themselves once created their families in the same way. So the absence of women in the police leads to impunity. And also, the procedure requires a forensic examination. But Kyrgyzstan police still do not have any DNA examination in cases of sexual violence. And the victims should experience several interrogations. And the police officers often ask them such questions like, what were you wearing? Why did you answer his calls? Why did you go out with him? Why didn't you scream when he was raping you? And all of that really traumatized victims in our country. And also, there are no programs for rehabilitating survivors of sexual violence. And private psychologists are very expensive, but survivors do need psychological help. But there is no governmental crisis centers in Kyrgyzstan, so there is no help for them.
Yeah, it is such a painful thing that we are talking about today. First, the woman goes through a painful tragedy of her not choosing. Then she's questioned and blamed for the events that were imposed upon her. Samrin, how this scenario that Kamila was describing is similar or different in Uzbekistan?
To be honest, I agree with Kamila. We have the same situation in Uzbekistan. The main problem is the victims are ashamed to tell because of social judgment and the question, what were you wearing? What were you wearing? Maybe it was your guilt.
What do they mean when the police officers ask what you were wearing to the victim? What they are trying to learn from there?
Because they think that women are responsible for rape cases because of their clothes, because maybe it was too much short skirt or anything. So they are just judge victims, but not men who did that. And the second big problem we have in our society, for example, last year we have such case. One girl was raped by a man, and her family told her, you should marry him because no one will marry you now because you were raped. We have such problem too.
Yeah, the data that I was talking about earlier, that's very, very tragic. So another problem is, by the way, as horrific as these stories, Kyrgyzstan is still sort of an exception in a way that people still try to fight back against these injustices, like the follow-up protests after Aizadeh's case. But many remain silent in the face of these tragedies, like, the way Aizadeh was kidnapped in the daylight and people keep passing through while the girl is grabbed by three men. I'm just wondering the root of this ignorance. Bruce, would you like to talk about this? The root of this ignorance by some people in the society. I mean, why they do what they do? I mean, yes, we understand the authorities, but what about the people? What about the society?
Yes, I want to add something. Because of social judgment, this social judgment forced these girls to make wrong decisions, because they are like society making victims guilty, and that's why they are forced to make such a decision, for example, to marry these rapers, and we have really big problems in our Central Asian region.
That was the question that I was posing to Bruce. I mean, what's wrong with the society, Bruce? I mean, why they behave the way they behave, like in many cases? Like in case of Kyrgyzstan, as I mentioned, you see sporadic protests. People are coming out to the street. Whether those actions change anything or not, that's a different story. But still, you see some activities taking place after each tragic story. But in countries like Uzbekistan, as Samrin was talking about, this life continues the way it used to be, like if nothing happened with Mukhlisa. Just wondered what the root of this ignorance.
Firstly, it is
Samrin, let's bring in Bruce.
Yeah, I want to be quick. I want to hear what Samrin has to say. Like I said, you know, the problem is that it's just accepted so, unfortunately, so widely. I mean, obviously our guests could comment a lot better than I could on this, but I mean, you know, the attitude people start so many papers with it's a patriarchal society and everything like that. You know, it's basically man's rule or something in the country. But it's weird how many people were willing to go along with this. You know, real briefly, in the case of Aizada, you know, when the family alerted the police that their daughter had been kidnapped and, you know, it was on film, you know, the response from the initial response from the police, at least this is what I heard from Azatik, our Kyrgyz service, was they said, you know, why are you worried about this? You know, soon you'll be dancing at your daughter's wedding. Now, this is the response from the police, right? Mm-hmm. This woman's daughter has been kidnapped. She's frantic. She's frightened, trying to figure out what's happening. And they don't even look at it as a crime at mm-hmm. this point, right? Mm-hmm. See, you know, you got that problem, you know, and like I said, unfortunately, it's become ingrained in a lot of parts of society that there's a certain acceptable behavior. And strangely, violence toward women is, for a lot of people, acceptable behavior.
That is very, very strange. That also, Bruce, just not a counter argument here, but, you know, recently, like last week, we were talking about Uzbekistan, like, you know, the activist is coming in support of like LGBTQ rights, for example. The way I understand it, that's way more sensitive topic than talking about the women rights. But if activists could come out in support of those kind of agendas, why not women's rights? I mean, what's wrong with that? As Samrin was talking about, there were not like any activities taking place when it comes to, you know, Mukhlisa's case there. And it's just so interesting to see this silence there.
You know, again, like I said, it's unfortunate that it's ingrained in some parts of the culture. And then, and then of course, it always raises the big question for me is, are the men that are involved in government and at the top guilty of this very thing? I mean, is that how their family works? You know, and if it does, then I suppose you wouldn't get much reaction from them.
Very sad. You know, I'm sure we are going to leave out many aspects in our conversation, but as much as I want this show to be the last show that we are talking about this painful story, but I feel we will unfortunately get back to it very soon, but we need to end the conversation very soon. So just one last question before we do that. Maybe to start with you, Camila, I mean, what can help, what can be done to stop this trend, the violence against women?
I think that the core of the problem lies in the attitude towards women in Kyrgyzstan. And girls since childhood learn how to serve her husband and his family. And the only solution is zero tolerance for violence. We should educate our children to respect women, respect their rights. And along with that, the state should assume responsibility for protecting women's rights. They should provide psychological help. They should make the law better. And so the courts and the police, the investigators should be on the victim's side, not on the rapist. And then the victims and survivors of the gender-based violence will feel that the law is on their side. They will feel that they have support from people, government, their family, and all of the country. I think that this is the solution for our country, because now we live in a, unfortunately, in a culture of violence, and it's time for changes.
Right. And Samrin, also, I want to ask your opinion about this. Earlier, you started talking about, in fact, about this very question, like what authorities should do or can do. So imagine you have a chance to talk to Saida Mirziyayeva, and it appears that she knows that there is something very wrong going on in the society, as her Instagram message tell us about the Mukhlisa's case. So if you had a chance to speak to her, what would you tell her to do to stop this thing?
I think firstly, I would tell her that we should change mentality of our society, of our people. It is the first. The second, as Camila mentioned, yes, education and laws. We should make laws stronger and better. And if our people will know that for any kind of violence, they will get a punishment, and laws will work better, so they will not do this. And I think that this main thing's this.
Okay, let's end this conversation with Bruce with you. So, you know, as you said earlier, we had a number of conversation about this issue on the right on the Majlis podcast here. So whenever we hear tragedies like Aizada, like Brulai, or like Mukhlisa, we do come back to this topic, but this won't change anything. You know, I'm sure, as you said, these cases do get attention by other number of other publications, a number of other platforms, but they are not also going to make much difference in terms of the big picture. Is there any lesson Central Asia can learn, Bruce, from other countries as they struggle to fix this?
I don't know. As long as the culture is, the mentality is what it is, I really don't know. But, you know, all the things we're talking about here are crimes, and the people that are responsible for them are criminals. And this is the way you have to look at it. There's nothing romantic. Right. There's nothing positive in this at all. And the people who perpetrate these things, when they're mentioned, they have to be mentioned as, you know, really the scourge of society. You know, the kind of people who hold everybody back. Their actions are, you know, like I said, criminal. You know, what it is... People have mentioned on social networks and stuff after what happened to Aizada. This is not, you know, a bride kidnapping. Even the term is strange. You know, what it is kidnapping, assault, and rape. Yeah. You know, it's not bride kidnapping. You know, so you have to get that mentality in there. You know, I mean, it's just horrible. This is a crime. There's nothing positive. There's nothing good about any of this stuff that happens. And if you engage in it, you know, then you're antisocial, and you should be locked away in prison for that, because, you know, we don't want people like that around with decent people in the country.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion here. Let's see, hopefully, someone will listen to these advices among the authorities in Central Asia. Hopefully, something will change. Every time when we hear these kind of painful stories coming out of the region, it just pains us. It pains everyone. It's not a pleasant story that keeps repeating there. So with this, thank you very much, Bruce Panier, senior journalist and the editor of Radio Free Pride Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Majlis podcast. And also big thanks goes to Sarmin Mamedova, an activist with the Nimolchi.org, an anti-violence project. And Sarmin was joining us from Tashkent today. Kamila Ishaliva, an independent journalist from Kyrgyzstan. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you again very much for your time and thoughts today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Pride Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.